Hey, this is Whitney, just quickly jumping in with a disclaimer. As always, the opinions expressed by ourselves and our guests belong to us and us alone. They do not reflect any of the opinions of our current or previous institutions and places of employment. Thanks so much for listening, and on to the episode.
Welcome to Humans in Their Natural Habitat. I'm Whitney.
I'm Whitney.
Okay, then I'm Carly.
Today.
Sure. Can I be turtle?
Sure.
Okay, then I'm gonna go take a nap, okay?
She doesn't, that's not what she does.
Then I'll be Nox.
Then you can take a nap.
Perfect. And then you can be turtle and just walk around in circles.
Ooh.
That's a lot of energy.
Sounds tiring.
Yeah, you would think, but is she tired? Nope. She wants to play, come get the toy. But anywho, we interviewed a really awesome zookeeper. She's been working as a zookeeper for about, 14 years? I think she said?
15.
15?
If we count her apprenticeship.
Oh, okay, with the apprenticeship. So she's been doing the job a long time.
And her name is Allison.
Her name is Allison. And she's about to take a big leap. She's going to move on down to Mexico. Change a career path. And that's what we talked about. And apparently, Nox is taking issue with that right now.
Nice side, Nox.
He's over being here, but that's okay.
Me too.
No. No, you were over being here from the minute you walked in the door.
I'm tired. I feel like I said every time.
Every single episode.
But this is worse. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
I told you, I had to get up early to go hunt for Pokemon cards.
And she made the legit... Like, the cards from the 1990s, not, like, the game, the app where you're going to hunt for Pokemon. Mon. Fuck.
Yeah.
Have you ever played the game, though?
No.
Has your husband?
No.
But he has the cards.
Yeah, from when he was, like, in fifth grade.
Because that's the appropriate age to play Pokemon.
I mean... No comment? No, because I think when that app came out, it was good because people, like, went outside and were walking around and, like,
doing stuff. Out in nature on your phone. It was a compromise.
Yeah, exactly. 50-50.
Yeah.
No, I just went to sleep really late because the washing machine broke. Mm-hmm. Then I had to get up really early to help my mother-in-law look for Pokemon cards in the barn. This all sounds fake, but this is what happened. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, and then Allison gave us alcohol on an empty stomach, and it was so good, but I'm so sleepy.
Yeah. Well, were you successful in getting the Pokemon cards?
I was successful in getting the Pokemon cards.
Great.
Now I'm going to be rich.
Okay.
So we can get a sound engineer.
Oh, wonderful. On the Pokemon card selling, because they're worth that much money.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you also get some Beanie Babies up in the barn, too?
No.
You got a Simon up there.
A what?
Oh, sorry. Too old for you. Oh. Simon, it was this really cool game. It was a round disc, and then it was kind of like Simon Says, and there was, like, lights.
Oh, I know that is.
It would light up in a certain pattern, and then you'd have to follow that pattern.
Yeah, no, I do know what that is. Okay. I just didn't know it was called that. I didn't remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Allison did not go look for Pokemon cards. She's going looking for jaguars.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a roundabout sort of way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she came and talked to us about her background, being a zookeeper for as long as she's been a zookeeper, and how now she's going to go into the conservation field as part of a nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
That's really their goal is to try and educate people in the area about the importance of native wildlife, and jaguars are kind of their flagship for the program.
And she likes to call their sexy animals.
Yeah, they're big, sexy, charismatic megafauna.
Mm-hmm. I do like me some megafauna.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, you know, speaking of Pokemon cards, there's nothing to do with that. But I recently remembered a game, like an 80s, 1990s game that I remember I used to love playing. It was the board game Truth or Dare. Did you ever play that as a kid?
Okay. No.
I'm too old. Never mind. I can't even relate to you. You know who would have known that game?
Allison?
Yeah, because we are the same age.
I mean, when you're a kid, like, a few years makes a big difference in it does. What
Hungry,
is
Hungry,
cool.
Hungry, Hungry Hippo.
Yes, I loved that game okay. when I was, like, really little.
Okay. Yeah, that was a good one.
Because you basically just smack that.
You smack yeah. the shit out of it, yeah. Operation?
Yeah.
Cool. Cool. That's an interesting one for kids, you know?
Did you not like Pokemon then?
Were you too I old didn't. For that? I was too old for Pokemon. Yeah, I did not know Pokemon.
That was when I was, like, in fifth grade.
Yeah. I was more like Care Bears and My Little Pony and Gummy Bears. And
I had My Little Ponies when I was really little.
Yeah, they're still around today. That's why. I mean, I had the OG ponies, so.
I would paint their hooves with my nail polish.
Why? They were colorful.
Mine's hooves weren't.
Yeah, but the whole pony was colorful.
Right, that was helping be more colorful.
Right. Okay. I nail polished the walls one day. Yeah, my dad wasn't happy.
No.
It was like cave art style. I was really proud of myself. It was red nail polish, too. I don't even know why, A, I had red nail polish, and B, I was left unattended with red nail polish, but I painted the heck out of some walls.
Yeah, I never did that. I would have gotten in huge trouble.
Oh, no, I got in trouble. Well, it was one of those things where, like, it seemed like a good idea at the time, and then you paint an entire wall with red nail polish, and then you go, oh, wait, nope, dad's not gonna like this. Gonna be mad. And he was.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in a previous year, I did crayon. It really is on him.
Allison's also very artistic.
She way more than my cave art wall painting, but yeah. I forgot to ask her about if she's going to be using her art sales, like her sticker sales and stuff, to help with the organization she is now a part of.
Oh yeah, I don't know. Maybe she'll design a new one.
Yeah, she did that really awesome vulture stickers. Mm-hmm. Donated it to the Vulture Conservation.
I think she still has them.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. Great. We'll tag that on our Instagram too. We didn't take the opportunity to talk to her about it, so.
Yeah.
Knox. Stop, buddy.
Knox has itchy feet. So he's licking his feet.
They're so itchy. This is falling off yet again.
Bye. On with the episode.
Yep.
We're recording.
Oh, is it me? Oh, I have to start always. Great.
It's a thing.
Hi, Allison. Welcome.
Hello, Cardi. And Whitney. And Knox. And Turtle.
Yes. So we're going to talk to you a little bit about how you started as a zookeeper and your new pathway that you're going to be on real soon. When you were little, what brought on your love of animals?
Well, I grew up in San Diego, so my parents would take us to the zoo all the time. So I definitely remember going to San Diego Zoo. I can't say that I really remember a lot of the big animals and things. I really remember the children's zoo, though. I know that there was a white pony named Sugar Plum. They had the little area where you could hold the chicks. I don't know what happened to the chicks after they turned into chickens.
Nuggets. They turned into nuggets.
Yes. And then the loaf of bread that had all the mice in it. There was like a mouse house with a loaf of bread.
I've never been there.
Yeah.
That's cute though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, going to the zoo all the time, going to the beach, exploring tide pools. Grew up with, you know, cats, neighbors having dogs and things, and riding horses.
That's awesome. Now, when you went to explore the tide pools, did you ever bring anything home?
Seashells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom very much said to us, do not take anything from these tide pools. And was very adamant. But my sister did not like to listen.
Uh-huh.
So she brought hermit crabs home.
Ooh.
And put them in a container in the closet.
And then they smelled wonderful.
She did not know how to take care of a hermit crab, so I don't even know what she was giving it, if she was giving them food at all. And my mom eventually followed the smell of death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No hermit crabs for you?
That's good that you only brought shells.
Because like a lot of broken little shells. It's always exciting to find like a piece of a lobster or something that would have been eaten. You know, a lot of walking around, sticking your finger in an enemy to make it go poof.
Yeah.
And squirt at you.
That's always fun times.
Did you ever find an octopus?
I do remember seeing a little octopus once, and starfish occasionally.
And the sea slugs.
Oh, yeah, the big purple. Yeah.
Just
sea cucumber things.
The listeners, we're making vulgar motions.
When I was in college, we went tide pooling for a class, and we found an octopus, and my professor, like, picked it up to show us, obviously, we were in another conservation class, and it inked him right in the face.
Oh, nice.
The best.
I hate when that happens.
Gets in your hair.
Yeah.
I hate when it gets in your hair.
Did you have a favorite animal growing up as a kid?
As a kid, it would have been domestic stuff, like cats and horses.
Now, did you have horses growing up?
I took lessons. I did not have a horse when I lived in San Diego. When we moved 28 years ago, I had a horse for a while.
You did like competitive riding, right?
Yeah, I did shows. Yeah, I did dressage and eventing, so that, you know, was expensive. And on a zookeeper's salary, you can't really afford to continue that.
And you just play with your friends first.
Yes.
Yeah, it's weird, like, taking care of animals all day
yeah.
and then going home and having a barn, I feel like, would be very exhausting.
Yeah, coming home and just trying to take care of the chickens and two cats and a dog is like...
So you lived in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
and then you moved to Arizona
mm-hmm.
when you were a kid still.
Yeah.
And did you go to school, like, having in mind wanting to work with the animals, or is that something that, like, happened later on?
No, I knew that I wanted to work with animals. I just wasn't sure in what way. I had thought about vet tech kind of stuff. I went to the U of A, and my degree was originally ecology and evolutionary biology, but I couldn't pass calculus, so I changed it to animal sciences.
You didn't tell me that was an option.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have that option either. I was able to pass calculus when I went to college in New Mexico. And then when I moved back to Florida to finish up my degree, only like a year left, U of A sent me a scholarship. U of A. University of Florida sent me a scholarship and was like, oh, yay, here's, you know, I was like, oh, great, the money that I need to finish the last year of school. And then I got a letter like a month after I got the scholarship saying, you didn't take the right calculus in New Mexico, so we're not letting you in.
Oh.
Yeah, so I went to University of Central Florida instead, and they did not make me take any further calculus. So. Yeah, but I didn't know there was an option to not take it.
That was my first C of my whole life. Calc 1 and Calc 2 at U of A.
Yeah, I had a great Calc teacher. Like, I went to all the after-school stuff.
Uh-huh.
I believe that was also the semester I had strep throat and mono.
Uh-huh.
It was a really difficult time getting through calculus, for sure. But I had an amazing teacher.
To then be like, wrong one. Do it again.
And then be like, wrong run. I was like, fuck you. I'm not even trying. No. Go Knights. FU Gators. Oh, I just lost a lot of fans.
I also don't like the Gators.
Oh, right, because of Georgia.
Yeah. So animal science, that mostly is geared towards, like, horses, right?
It was a lot of, I did take some equine science classes, but it was also a lot of, like, meat lab and dairy science.
Oh, yeah.
So.
You would be a great dairy farmer.
I've never actually milked a cow.
But you've got the motion down.
Yes, okay. I do have the motion. I feel like if you put heat in front of me, I could make milk come out of it.
Thank you. I was just thinking like a League of Their Own and those two girls, and I'm like, yeah, you have the stature for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I could be
a milkmaid.
Yeah.
Because you made like a big agricultural school, so that's the focus
mm-hmm.
in that program, right? It's like, I looked at it. It's like industry or, yeah.
Yeah, I had animal science industry.
Oh.
So it was... equine science, meat lab, dairy, you know, going to the meat lab, you could go and evaluate the cattle before, and the next week you saw them coming into the classroom in a different form.
Oh, okay. I thought the meat lab was like a bar downtown.
Oh, that's the meat rack, and it is closed now. But I also spent a lot of time there in college, too.
Did you get branded?
I did not.
Good.
Branded?
Yeah, you get branded there.
What?
You get free beer or something, right?
No, you get like a quarter off of beer. You don't even get free beer.
One of my TAs when I was in college had the brand.
An actual brand.
Yeah, like
with the guy's face.
Into your skull.
His name is God, right?
Yeah.
into your
He's
skin.
He's on my keychain.
Yeah.
That, like, lasts forever.
Yeah, and you get a quarter off beer.
Yeah.
Forever. Or until they close down.
It's closed.
Yeah.
It closed this year.
That was my favorite TA in college, because he told 18-year-old girls about that really inappropriate.
Yeah.
Okay, so in walked a live cow. I mean, out walked a live cow, and in walked a meat.
Yeah, the next week.
Okay, the next week.
So I learned about that part of, you know, the animal industry.
That would be a hard thing to learn.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, at that point, I did an internship at a zoo here in town and decided that that's what I wanted to do, that I wasn't really going to go that path of animal industry in that way.
Yeah.
So I ended up doing an internship in college and then apprenticeship and then got hired to another facility.
Oh, yeah,
town.
You're our first apprentice that we've talked to.
Oh, yes!
So you're like zookeeper light.
Yes.
For minimum wage.
I was actually getting less than minimum wage in the beginning, and then they had to back pay me because they realized that you couldn't pay people less than minimum wage.
So you... Jesus Christ.
Were you like one of the... No, they have had apprentices forever.
Yeah, no, I was not like the beginning
one. They've had them for like a bajillion years.
So you started as like a free... working for free volunteering. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, we have this apprenticeship. So was it the same animals as your volunteer work as the apprenticeship, or did you advance?
It was all the same animals. I had worked with keepers in all those different areas, but then as an apprentice, you basically got trained and then got to work alone.
Okay, so it's like working by yourself versus work. Okay.
It was, I mean, I feel like the program is basically you hire someone on like a one-year contract, essentially, so they get their one-year paid experience, and then they're able to get a full-time keeper job, either there, if there's an opening and you did a good job, or somewhere else.
Yeah, because most keeper jobs, that's the first thing they say, you need to have a certain amount of experience, and well, how do you get experience? How do you get paid experience? Yeah, it's a conundrum.
You get paid less than minimum wage, back paid.
So what were the initial animals you got to work with?
That facility, I worked with giraffe, rhino, tiger, Aldabra tortoise, assorted birds in the aviaries, hoofstock, anteater.
Were you kind of like a swing? Did you
have
Okay. I was like, you don't have a section.
No.
Whatever they needed help with is kind of what you did, which is pretty cool because then you get to know like what animals you really like to work with and what pathway you might want to take.
I got to start learning about birds. Like, I never really had any experience in my life around birds and was always kind of like, I don't know about birds. I don't know what they're thinking. They seem scary to me. And now they're one of my favorite animals
to
work
with.
Yeah,
you're like a big bird nerd. Yeah. Like, that's like your thing.
Yeah.
Like, I go to you, I'm like, I don't know this songbird, Alaska, listen.
It's honestly like a really great program. It would be awesome if more zoos had it because you do get experience with lots of different animals, so you can either figure out what you want to do, or you're just more hireable because you're like, oh, Allison just said, you know, a bunch of different types of areas she worked on. She could apply for lots of different
animals. And getting to work with so many different keepers, too. Mm-hmm. Learning from their experiences. And
they tend to have different personalities.
Yeah.
You know, your reptile keeper is definitely going to be different from your hoofstock keepers, I've found. So it's kind of finding your niche with them, too.
And then you did not start working at that facility. You went to a different facility.
And I've been there for, it'll be almost... I'm almost going to make it to 14 years.
Why don't you just make it to 15?
Yeah, you should all just stay. Because you should just stay. That's a long time to put in as a zookeeper.
Yeah, and I've loved it, and it's been great. And, you know, I've learned a lot, and I've been fortunate to work with all these different species and people and learn so much there, and I'm just getting ready to start a new adventure.
Yeah. Now, were you surprised about what animal you kind of gravitated towards? Because a lot of times, especially with zookeepers, you have in mind, like, I thought that I would be an elephant keeper for the longest time when I was pursuing animals. I thought I'd work with elephants, and I started at a zoo, and I'm like, no, I don't think I ever really want to work with elephants because I fell in love with bats. So, was there anything like an experience
with that? Yeah, I always thought I would want to be like a large cat kind of person. And I love foxes and skunks and vultures and ringtails. Yeah.
And that almost goes back to when you were a kid.
Yeah.
You do like the little things.
Yeah.
The little
furry ones.
And we're pretty lucky. I don't know if it's lucky, but a lot of animals are confiscated pets or rehab animals. So they are really comfortable being around humans because they're non-releasable.
Yeah.
So you get to have a lot of hands-on time with like the little guys.
Yeah.
Like your child.
Yes, my son.
Your son, the ringtail.
Now, being at a facility for that amount of time, how do you continue to grow and learn as a zookeeper to keep up with the new ways that we care for animals?
Reading online, just, and new people that come into our department. It's great to have new ideas and ways of doing things and experiences from other areas.
Now,
she just needs a moment.
Who?
Turtle.
Oh, sorry. Turtle. She's just doing her rounds, guest relations and all. Yeah.
I actually have a question.
Great.
This is very specific, though. So, how did you get into training? Because I feel like you did a really cool behavior with bear training. Was that something you saw online? You were like, oh, I want to try to do this? Or how did you start getting into, like, basically training for husbandry?
Just working with their keepers, like, I didn't have a lot of experience in it, so just other people's guidance and just kind of the problem-solving part of it, seeing what needed to be done and figuring out the best way to get there.
Not to be super cryptic, but you and another one of our, like, teammates trained a bear for voluntary blood draw, which is really cool.
Well, it was the whole, everybody working, the whole department doing the behavior. But yeah, we were able to get a voluntary blood draw on the black bear, which was really exciting.
Yeah.
You could tell from the video. All the voices got really high at the end.
And then you had to present it at, like, a conference, which was really cool, and tell other people about the awesome stuff you're doing to help, like, medical needs without the need for sedation or anesthesia, which is super awesome. And again, with another rehab animal, an animal that had problems that needed to be regularly checked on.
Do you find it more challenging training an animal in a rehab situation versus one that was born and raised in a zoo?
I don't know. I guess the rehab situation, because they may have had bad experiences with humans before, or that they just haven't always been around people, unless they were raised in a rehab, if they were orphaned or whatever, then that seems like they have a little more connection to humans. But the rehab animals that were older when they came in and just are a little more afraid of people, that's more difficult.
More of a challenging scenario. When you eventually figured out, I want to try zookeeping, was it what you thought it would be initially, or what did you learn?
I don't know. I hadn't really experienced other parts of the zoo, so I wasn't expecting to work so much with people, I guess. not like so much with the public, like interacting with them as much. Mm-hmm. Which I do enjoy, unless they're assholes.
Delightful.
I wasn't expecting to have to clean up so many maps and water bottles out of exhibits.
Yeah, that is a challenge. What exhibit did you have to clean up the most water bottles, mats, and hats from, do you think?
I'm wondering if it's the same. It's probably a tie between bighorn and bobcat.
Bobcat?
Yeah.
I find otter at a lot of zoos is also... Because when I worked at a previous zoo with an otter exhibit, I wasn't the keeper of the otter, but I swear it's like every day... Yeah. They were calling the otter keeper because there was a map or a water bottle or a hat or a kid's shoe or...
Do you think we don't get those calls because she just hides it so you can't find it?
Yeah. Puts it in her den, puts it on her head.
She has her little treasure chest log underwater. Yeah. Was it like sunglasses or trying for like a couple weeks?
Yeah.
Did she hide them?
unlike the beaver that's just like, I'm putting this in my den. Yeah. Look at that, what I found.
Don't take it.
Now, you had to have a lot of fun stories, and I know Whitney's favorite question is the best situation that you've had.
You mean, like, me shitting on an animal or an animal shitting on me?
Okay, you can interpret as you will, but I want to hear about your bowel movements. Can we hear about those enough?
They're both equally likely, so... So the best situation I think I've had... was a hummingbird shit in my mouth.
I mean, the odds of that happening have to be...
Yeah, I was in there counting and just kind of looking up, and I think I had allergies, so I was breathing through my mouth. It was very sweet. It was, yeah. If any animal to shit in your mouth, I'd have to say a hummingbird is probably the best.
Right. It's just sugar, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, because their diet is going to be mainly nectar and sugar. Say
a vulture, not so great.
Oh, God.
No.
Heron, no.
I don't know how a heron... I get a flighted one.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, chicken's poop. I mean, I've had my head pooped on by a black-crowned night heron, and that easily could have gotten into my mouth if I was not...
I had a friend with a vulture, and it was a wild vulture. It was just flying over. Yeah, she had a class she was teaching outside, and it just... It looked like one of those, like, popular streaks in the 90s that just went right down the side of her face and her hair, and she just looked at me, and I was like...
Frosted tips.
I was like, I'll watch the kids. Go clean that.
And that's exactly what happened to me with the black crowned night heron. It was a wild one, and it was after closing the zoo at the end of the day. Like, walking... I was at the first place you went. Walking on the back path, and it just... On my head, I had, like, Cruella de Vil, white streak, and I had my intern with me, and she just laughed her ass off that I just got pooped on by a disgusting fish smelling bird. At least it was at the end of the day.
Yes.
You know, at least it was at the end of the day, not the beginning. It's gross. So, no, nothing exciting like that happened on you.
No, nothing. Well... I mean, I've landed in poop and stepped in it, but I can't think of a time that something large has ever just, like, explosive diarrhea all over me.
You didn't want to usually do that.
Yes.
How many shark stories do you
have? So what is your favorite thing about the job? I mean, you've been doing it for almost 15 years, so what do you like the best?
I love working with the critters and getting to know them each individually and their personalities, spending time with them, you know, seeing what they get excited about, like what enrichment they're like, oh yeah, this is great, and then the other ones are like, fuck that, I don't care.
You're so hard.
Yeah. Stupid. This is when I want to be my so best friend.
Yeah.
And nothing.
Yeah.
And you're so artistically gifted. You are like our enrichment painter extraordinaire. She paints us for, we love a good theme.
Yeah.
That we're,
yeah.
We do. Love a good themed holiday. She's the one painting our R2-D2 on the
cat
Bernie. Yeah.
That was a disappointment because he didn't even want to open that wine bottle.
That was so sad. We made a giant, like, when I say mountain lion size, not a wine bottle appropriately sized for a mountain lion, a bottle the size of a mountain lion. She made this great cardboard wine bottle for a wine event, and he didn't like it at all.
No, maybe he gave it up for Lent.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe definitely.
Yeah. Maybe he was like, thanks, but I'm not drinking currently.
Yeah. But it looked really good in the picture. I think I saw the pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Some great enrichment. Yeah, you're so great at making this stuff. Oh, and then the Jabba the Hutt scene.
Yeah.
It always seems to be the one you're the most excited about. The original, you're most, this animal's going to love this. I've nailed all of it. Like, checked all the boxes off. Like, this animal likes to dig. This animal likes smells. So this is the perfect thing. And then you put it in there and they're like, I don't want that.
Thanks.
No. Oh, that's a nice cardboard tube, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the thing that you don't think they'll play with at all or mess with at all, it's the best thing ever, and they rip it to shreds. And
like the cats with their apples.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would never expect. Here's an apple. Go have fun.
Destroy it.
Yeah, you'd think that they would ignore it, not tear it up in tiny little shreds.
Hilarious.
That's how it goes. Now, you're going to be leaving the keeper biz.
Yeah.
So what could you tell someone coming in new? What's your best advice to any new keeper?
Wear your sunblock.
Oh. You are such a sunblock like person.
Like,
you come in and she's just covered her face in white.
And with my big giant hat
giant
and my
hat,
buff and sungloves.
Yep, I mean,
I could see your ankles last week. Like,
I know. Yeah, I think there's a tan line on them now.
For 15 years, and you have great skin. So
yeah. She's cover
the,
up.
She's the one with the cute face. I don't know how any volunteer have seen her face, but a volunteer walked up to me and she was asking me about Allison. And I didn't know who she was talking about. She's like, "Well, I told that one keeper that was here yesterday," and I was like, "Well, I don't know which keeper was in this area yesterday. Oh, it's the, you know, the one with the cute face." I was like, "So not me." Okay. Thanks. So then we figured out it was Allison. And I don't know how she's ever seen your face.
Yeah.
But yeah. The one with the cute face. So yeah, wear your sunscreen. And
yes,
you might
you're
also.
You're going to work outside. Wear your sunscreen.
Have a cute face.
Don't get skin cancer. Protect it.
Yeah. Don't get them wrinkles.
I mean, you've been a positive influence. I wore shorts at the last two places I've worked at all the time. And when I wore shorts to work a few weeks ago, everyone was like, "What are you wearing?" I wore pants a lot.
It was blinding. The white legs were blinding.
Yeah,
it was just so...
Don't ever wear shorts to work anymore.
I wear shorts, but I also wear the long socks. Yeah. So I only have knee exposure.
So you have knee tan.
And I do wear the sunscreen. I always forget my part, though, because I don't like wearing hats because it makes me more klutzy.
It's
really bad. I've had a lot of concussions, and if I put a hat on, I'm more likely to bang my face. So I don't like wearing hats because I have a tiny head, big hat. So I always miss my part and
I guess
burnt.
Other thing I would recommend, other than sunscreen, coming in is, you know, it's great to learn from other people. So if you have a good mentor, take their advice, their experiences, and apply them to whatever you're doing.
But
having great people that have gone through it before, you know, and at least in our departments, it's everyone's very close and connected and kind of like a little sorority.
Yeah. So. But I do know a lot of keepers come in and they want to impress you with their knowledge and skills. You know, there's an arrogance that comes with that. They don't want to ask for help because they know. And that's probably the worst way to go into it.
Yeah.
And you want to ask and get other people's knowledge because, you know, you might not have worked with this animal before. But the person that just started might have at that last facility for 5 years. So it's great to get that back and forth.
I feel like you hear a lot. I don't know if it's just social media brings out the worst in people. But I feel like there's a lot of things I read in different groups that people have really like negative work environments. It seems like we're so lucky.
Yeah.
Everyone is legitimately friends.
Yeah.
Like we get along and everyone is totally gonna be like, "Hey, what do you think about this?"
Yeah.
Like the person that's been in our department for over 20 years, we'll ask you what you think about it. And it goes the other way too. Any of us can come up to you and be like, "Hey, Allison, like, why do we do this way?"
Yeah. And I'll be like, "I don't know." We
usually can figure out like why, or if we think there's a better way to do it, like, we're all happy to try it and see if it works. And we're so lucky.
it's definitely different because when I worked at a different facility, I had worked with possums before and I had some knowledge on working with possums from a rehab situation, but I wasn't even allowed to talk about my experience because I was too new, too fresh, and they didn't want to hear it. And yeah, like you said, in this department, someone that's been here, been doing this job longer than me came up and was like, "Hey, what about this? Do you know about this?" And I'm like, "Why are you asking me?" You know, I was so caught off guard. But it's really good to know that we can ask each other things without judgment or any kind of arrogance or anyone looking at you like you don't know what you're doing.
No, it's a really, it's like the healthiest team
environment. Yeah.
Just like in a zoo, just even having jobs not in a zoo, people just don't normally get along.
Yeah.
And it's not like there's three of us. Like, it's a decent amount of people.
there's enough personalities in there that you would think that there'd be more conflict than this, but there's not.
And we even like get along with our boss.
Yeah.
In the best way, though. Absolute best way.
And you're going to leave. I'm leaving all that to go shit in the bucket.
Yeah, leaving all that.
Oh, bye, Nox.
So, yeah,
his leg is in the cord. Buddy.
Oh, my goodness, Nox. So, you're starting a new adventure.
I am.
And you're going to be...
She's
not with you. Oh, my goodness. No. Okay, well, let's get the... We'll just get the kisses out of the way.
Delicious.
He thinks you have a cute face, too.
Oh, he likes an armpit.
Well, oh,
did I put down
that? I'm like, armpit.
Very, too much.
Face.
Okay, we're going to focus again. So you started working with a group called La Tierra.
La Tierra del Jaguar.
Del Jaguar.
Land of the Jaguar. La Tierra del Jaguar.
And when did you first find out about this organization?
So just about 2 years ago, I met the founder of this organization, Randy, at an event. And it's a brand new nonprofit. It's only, now it's only about 2.5 years ago. And it's about 2.5 years old, and I met Randy about 2 years ago. So it's pretty new. And we are going to be working in Sonora, Mexico, working with the community around in and around Sahuaripa, which is about 8 hours south of here, if you go through Douglas. And we're going to be working, building a demonstration site to teach regenerative agriculture, large-scale landscape restoration, and provide economic opportunities in the name of the Jaguar.
Very good. So you go to this event, this conservation event.
Which was for your birthday.
Yeah.
we can't ignore, you've always been super passionate about conservation.
Absolutely.
And specifically Jaguar. That's why I was there, right?
Yes.
Because we were doing
right.
a thing yeah. to raise money for
yeah.
another organization.
To bring together big cats have always been something you love.
Yeah.
So you go to this event and you find out about this organization. What really wanted, what made you want to become involved?
I just really liked the idea of doing conservation this way. I've seen how, the Cheetah Conservation Fund is so successful with their work in a community where it's not, just buying up land.
Right.
Which is great,
right,
they definitely, animals need places.
Buy up land, you can't build on it.
Yep. But people aren't going away. So working with communities to make wildlife's life better and the human is the only way to really continue this.
Yeah, people want to do something that benefits them.
Yes.
Right.
So make it beneficial to have a jaguar.
Yes.
And then you're going to make sure that jaguar's safe.
Yep.
What was it that you started doing for the organization when you first started out?
I started out doing event planning, and then COVID hit. So we had one really good beer release event.
Yeah, that was fun. I was there.
And then, 2 weeks later, COVID happened. I've gotten into a lot of the social media and video editing, making videos about the project and some of the animals that we have on the demonstration site down there, which has been fun. It's I get to use my artistic side more. But it's also challenging because I'm not very computer savvy.
You're saying this to the person that just spent 45 minutes
yeah.
doing their phone work. So you're volunteering
yes.
with this organization currently.
Yes.
While working full time.
While working full time
yes.
as a zookeeper. And where was I going with this?
You're volunteering.
So you're currently volunteering in the position doing event planning.
Event and outreach. I'm contacting groups for donations. So right now I'm basically a social media event outreach graphics donor relations.
It's still a small organization.
Yeah.
You said just started a couple years
yes.
ago. Right now it's going to be based on free labor.
Yes.
Get stuff up and running.
Mm-hmm. We are definitely under, I did the taxes for the last couple of years. We're definitely under that $50,000 mark where you have to start itemizing things. So right now it's pretty much just Randy, the founder, director, and myself but we're hoping in the very near future that we'll be expanding a little bit and that maybe we'll actually get paid for what we're doing.
And the hub of the organization is in Mexico.
We will be focusing our work in Sonora. We're working on getting our Asociación Civil, which is like the Mexico version of a nonprofit.
Okay.
So we'll have our Mexico nonprofit status. Also, Randy is a dual citizen, so he is able to do all that and own land in Mexico. So we're in the process of building our demonstration site for the regenerative agriculture and habitat restoration. Randy used to work for the Jaguar Reserve that's in that area. One of the things that he ran into when he was there is that a lot of the ranchers and farmers, when they'd bring people out to do the habitat restoration and things, they'd be like, well, that's not gonna work here. That's not gonna work here. And it won't if you don't follow through on the things. Mm-hmm. So he felt the need to create a demonstration site where people can see these processes happening. These things aren't like an instant gratification thing. You don't move some rocks to slow the flow of water and all of a sudden you have this beautiful forest. It takes years of work. Having a place for people to see that, that's easy for them to access and learn the processes from start to finish, was essential to our mission to heal the land, help the people, and save the jaguar.
Can I ask why you guys, or why Randy, since he's the founder mm-hmm. that really originated this, why did he choose the Jag specifically?
It's more of the Jag chose him, I think.
Oh. origin story.
Yeah. Just that he was able to work for this, all his skills mm-hmm. led him to be able to work for this organization to, you know, manage a reserve. And he just kind of fell in love with the area and the people and just had a calling to work down there and work to save the jaguar. And, you know, this, it's what's brought a couple of the people together that we've been working with, so.
And the hope is that by helping jaguar conservation, there should be a trickle-down effect,
yes.
right? Like, this isn't really just specific
to No. Jazz. The jaguar is the charismatic megafauna, the big sexy animal that people will be drawn to and is important to being that species that will save the large areas of habitat, but you know, by saving the jaguar, you're saving the plant life, you're saving the frog, everything below it.
Save the jaguar, save the world.
Yes.
And that is like our only big cat on this mm-hmm. side of the world.
Yep.
Especially in the United States,
yes.
we have a handful,
yes.
right, of documented ones
so
that come here.
Yeah, and they're coming from that population, most likely from that population in Sonora, which is, I believe it's only about 100 miles from the border. So those males that we're getting up here on occasion are most likely wandering up, searching for territory. There haven't been any females in the U.S. since like the 60s when one was killed up in the White Mountains.
That's pretty far
yeah.
north.
Historically, they were, I think, most of Arizona, Texas, and part of California.
Okay.
But then they were extirpated, and then back in the like mid-90s is when they had the evidence of them in New Mexico, I believe.
Okay, and it's like pretty well documented, it's those same individuals.
Yeah, there's been 7 different ones that have been documented in the U.S. Right in our backyard, basically, you know, the
yeah.
Santa Rita's are only like 45 minutes away and we got a jaguars.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you see the trail cams, how they can track them by pattern.
Uh-huh.
Is that something you guys are interested in doing, is like setting up trail cams to track what's coming on to the land?
Yeah, we're definitely going to set up trail cameras to monitor the wildlife. This space
that
we're
at,
we're pretty close to the town. That's why that space was chosen, because it's easy for people to come see the demonstration site. So it's not likely that we will get a jaguar on our demonstration site, but with the rancher things that we want to work with eventually, we will definitely be setting up things to monitor what wildlife is coming through there.
What exactly
is the demonstration site. What exactly are you building, and how is that going to impact the area?
Yeah, what are you demonstrating?
So we currently have 25 acres on the Rio Sawaripa, and it's farmland, and then the upper land is there's a lot of organ pipe and boat thorn acacia. It'll be a great place for growing agave.
Tequila.
And speaking of, wouldn't get tequila without the bats.
Yes.
Bring the bats.
Yeah, that's one of the. No.
Okay. Bats but, bring the booze.
Yes.
Bats bring the booze. You gotta love bats.
So, yeah, one of the things we want to do is plant agaves, show different ways of planting different crops. The lower farmland will do kind of a permaculture, which is a variety of plants that you're not just doing a one type of crop. You're planting different things and having buffer zones for wildlife, too. So if the coatis are coming and eating all your corn, you plant more native species around the perimeter that they would be eating
instead
regularly. You make an allowance for wildlife. You're not going in and killing everything, which is kind of the standard right now.
Kind of like what they did in Africa with the bees and the elephants.
I haven't seen that.
They've been doing a lot of bees structures, so they're bringing like beehives and stuff and doing honey, and the elephants don't like to be around the bees, so keeping them from the crop, having that the beehives there, and then they're also being able to sell honey, so it's profiting the farmers.
Exactly,
and it's just like a win-win-win-win-win.
And Tony, our last guest, talked about the exact same thing with agricultural crops here in the United States. They did a study where when they planted that wildflower buffer zone, the pest, quote-unquote, species, they stayed out of the food for the people because they were eating the stuff they wanted to eat.
And that's exactly what we're trying to bring down there and demonstrate. So on the site, we're building a classroom and workshop area, so we'll be able to hold classes and then begin the planting and all the different things down there.
The basis for a lot of conservation is to start with education.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important to build this demonstration site in Mexico, even though the nonprofit started in Tucson.
So it's just going to give people a place to come. And we hope that it'll be somewhere where people can come and learn these processes and then take them to their communities wherever they are.
And that seems like a pretty, I mean, I know it's going to be much more involved than that, but that's like a really simple thing to tell people, like, hey, if you literally just throw native plants out that you really don't even have to take care of because they're native, it is going to benefit you with very minimal effort being put in.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of, you know, working with rotational grazing too, because if you plant those native plants and then you don't keep your cows off of them, then they're just cowpacks and they don't get a time to mature. So that's one of the things that we also want to demonstrate is what happens when you start shifting your animal around and don't just leave them on a one piece of land that's been overgrazed for many years. And then there's also people like to plant buffalo grass down there.
So
no, not the buffalo, gotta get that out of there.
Anyone from Arizona?
Yes, we all know about the buffalo grass. Yeah.
So it's interesting that you went to school for this kind of agriculture.
Yeah.
Oh, that works out.
Yeah.
You jumped into zookeeping, but hey.
And now I'm kind of going back to
you're back to the
agriculture.
Roots.
Yeah.
Turns out you picked the right thing all along. Cottage. Because you have a lot of experience with this. And now you're doing it hands-on.
Yeah.
Screw you, calculus.
Yeah.
I don't need to pass calculus. Turns how often have you used calculus since you graduated?
Every day.
Yeah.
You know, school's just to prove that you can learn how to learn. You know? It's really not what you're learning. It's that you are learning. You're not inept.
You're going to
take a big leap, though.
Yeah.
Because not only you started with this nonprofit and you're doing the volunteer work and you're really enjoying it, but you're not going to head out of the United States and move on down to Mexico.
I am.
What made you say, this is the right time, this is what I really want to do, and I'm just going to do it?
Well, originally it was a 5-year plan. Once I decided that this was something I really wanted to do, I kind of decided that I was just going to work slowly towards it. And then, you know, with COVID and, you know, a death of important person, you know, just kind of reiterated that I just need to go do this. This is just something I need to do. If I have a chance for this adventure and to grow, that I just need to take it and move forward and crap in a bucket and live off of $500 a month.
Speaking of shitting in a bucket, how is it down in Mexico? What is like?
We are going to have a composting toilet, so we're not going to have, you know, your flush toilet.
Okay.
But we will have toilets.
Don't be scared to visit.
There will be toilets.
I didn't mean to.
And it won't be so specific.
I meant the whole Mexico experience.
Oh, I love it. I think a lot of people from the U.S. have this kind of distorted vision of what Mexico is like because they either are watching the narco shows, or you visit the border towns or the resort towns.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rural ranching community.
Oh, you're not going to Cancun?
No. There's no, like, tits and beer flying around.
I mean, there will be, but...
There will be, yeah. It's not this, like, scary place. It's very much a community. Everybody kind of knows each other. It's different. The town that I'll be going to, there's no big chain stores or anything, right. You know, you can't go to Target when you want a new shampoo or anything.
Starbucks.
Yeah, no. They have two Oxxos, which are like Circle K's, and everything else is like little family-owned businesses, mm-hmm. Which is awesome.
Was that part of your decision-making? You went down there the first time to visit, to check it out, and I assume Randy showed you the site he wanted to build on.
Yeah.
Was that kind of the, wow, I really do want to do this.
Yeah.
I love it here.
Yeah. As soon as I stepped foot on the demonstration site land, I was like, this feels like home.
Yeah.
It's all the plants and animals that I've spent the last 14 years working with down there.
Yeah.
So, I was used to everything, you know, hearing all the different birds that I've worked with for so long, hearing them and seeing them in the wild is just very exciting.
Yeah.
And there's something about, like, seeing them out. We all work at a zoo. Like, we understand the mission of zoos is to be ambassadors for the species, tell people why they're important. You know, we're lucky that we are able to give a lot of animals a home that would otherwise be euthanized. But, like, I know we did the same Australia program.
Yeah.
When I saw those penguins, like, swimming from the ocean, it was the most amazing thing in the entire world. And then later I saw them, like, in one of the zoos down there. Very, very nice zoo.
Yeah.
They looked very well cared for. It just was it's different.
Yeah.
It's, you know it in your head when you just, like, see them out there. It's, like, it's like touching. I don't know. It's weird. It's amazing.
And you did mention, you know, people have a negative connotation about Mexico.
Yeah.
I was really lucky as a kid. We went to the Big Bend National Park in Texas, and we crossed the Rio Grande in this little leaky boat and went to a little village. And I had such a positive experience.
Yeah.
I remember being a very picky eater, but they had these little burritos and tacos in this little village with the bottled Cokes, and the people were just so lovely and nice and accommodating.
Yeah.
And I remember having that, like, positive, homey experience.
Yeah.
As well.
And that's how it is, you know, where we're going to be working out of. And people are pretty, they like the idea of what we're doing, even if not everybody totally understands it, they see it as a positive thing for the community.
Did you, when you went to U of A, I know, like, a couple classes I took, we went to Mexico and did, like, overnight field trips and stuff. Did you do anything like that?
No, because I was in ecology and because I couldn't pass.
Agriculture.
Calculus.
We went to some stables for the
science. Yeah, she was fixed in to be a dairy farmer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because we would go to Cato a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Have you ever been there?
Uh-uh.
You were in a different, you were a different level.
Yeah. We should go there sometime. Yeah. I mean, it's not close because it's on the coast, but yeah. It's very similar mission-wise. Like, they have the center down there, so people can go and, like, spend a couple days. They have, you know, like, bunks and stuff, and it's like the, you know, if it's not brown, don't flush it down type rules and stuff there. Like, but it's really fun.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a cool, unique thing about the school is you get to go on field trips in another country.
Yeah.
So what is your 5-year plan there?
For this first year, we are trying to get this classroom finished. We've got all the most of the materials. We've got the footer set with the rocks. We have the steel structure that the solar panels are going to go on. We have all the solar panels. We have all the windows and glass that we need. We have the earth bags. We need some more money for the roofing and framing work that needs to be done. So this first year, we're planning on trying to get that classroom built. And then by January 2022, we would like to start holding classes and workshops. In the next 5 years, we'd like to be working with more ranchers and farmers in the
community. Like a hands-on in the field experience.
As the demonstration site is kind of maturing and growing out, we'd like to be working with kids groups, starting like kids clubs. Working on collectives is another thing. So if we're trying to bring an economic opportunity to people, you know, they need to be able to sell their products. So teaching them how to market and sell their salsas or bananas.
You need to tell the audience what a bacanora is.
I actually have some.
Is that the surprise?
That is the
Turtle
surprise.
Has been like, take that out of the bag.
It's booze.
Yeah, Turtle, you can't have booze. You're only 16. You're not 21 yet.
This is
Knox. Knox, so, you're not even 16.
I brought two. I have, this just is a little bit left of my favorite one.
Don't that be looks scared. Like a plant in dirt water.
No, I'm going to get more.
Okay.
So it's also, so bacanora is similar to a tequila or a mezcal. The best way I can explain it is like, you know how in France there's like the different grapes and different regions
like
make.
Champagne is only from champagne. Everything else is sparkling wine.
So like tequila, mezcal, they're different kinds of agaves. Mm-hmm. From different regions. Bacanora is from agaves in Sonora. And it is like they harvest the agave plants, they roast them in a pit, and then distill them. So this is from some guy. you meet like down there. Sometimes someone just shows up with a bottle of Bacanora and like a 2-liter old Coke.
So is it kind of a comparison of moonshine being made in the backwoods of Kentucky.
It's like tequila moonshine.
But you guys probably drank jungle juice out of somebody's bathtub in college, so you're fine.
Actually, I don't think I've ever tried
it. So you can smell it. This one has the
it smells
roasted agave in it.
No, Whitney's like rubbing alcohol.
Whitney had a problem with moonshine.
I'm from
not
Georgia.
Jungle juice.
No,
Florida had the jungle juice.
juice.
Oh, that smells nice. It does look like you burnt. What is this stuff you wrap around the tamales?
Corn husk.
The corn. It looks like a corn husk in water. That's just dirty.
That's tequila.
It smells great.
It's just a char, right?
It's some char.
It's just been dissolving in there, so it's not.
It's a botanical infused alcoholic beverage.
It just, but
I'll give you guys a sip just in case.
It just looks like it's time to clean the pool at Otter Water.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then hopefully one day have a little store.
Yeah. So it's just, we'll be with the collectives, we can work with the people to teach them how to market and sell and possibly export here, and then people will own those collectives. So,
awesome.
And maybe give money back to the community.
That's really cool. Just
so,
like an outlet for them to be able to sell their goods, basically.
Yeah.
Teach them how to do that. Mm-hmm.
And everything goes back to the Jaguar because we'll only be doing it for items that are made in a certain way with the regenerative agriculture. So, in that way, we are still helping the jaguar.
I mean, that's super cool.
And are you working with other conservation projects as well?
We've talked to some other conservation groups, so hopefully that'll be happening. You know, everything is kind of hinging on getting this classroom built and having a base down there and then growing from there.
Yeah. So you can be kind of a united front in saving the jaguar.
Yes. Yeah, we want to work with everybody. We want, we're not about hoarding a certain area or anything. We want everyone to be involved. The whole point is to save the jaguar and the environment, not to take ownership of a certain thing.
Well, let's cheers to the jaguar.
Cheers to jaguar.
We can save things by drinking our milk.
Clink, clink, clink.
All
right. Oh!
It's good.
It tastes like it smells.
Yeah, it's smoky.
It doesn't have it does. Like...
It's very smoky, for sure. It's, I feel like I was a dragon that just kind of attacked a village, and this is the aftertaste.
Yeah. And that's why I like this one. The other ones, they're usually clear, don't have the roasted chunk in it. I really prefer the roasted one.
It's really good. There's a lot of like, ooh! But it doesn't have like that bad aftertaste. No, it just tastes like smoke.
Yeah, it's like charbroiled aftertaste.
Oh, gosh, here's another one.
So this one.
We probably should have started the episode with alcohol. Because it would have only...
That would be more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So this one, Whitney, I brought especially for you.
Because it's part moonshine?
Because I know that you like the spicy hot chicken wing thing. The watching the people eat the chicken wings.
Is it spicy?
So this one is...
Is Hot Ones tequila?
You just want everyone to shart. Like you sharted in the car.
Yes.
One day. Was it down to Mexico when you sharted?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't a Mexico trip? Okay.
So this one is I infused with chiltepín.
Oh, but that's good.
Chiltepín.
Yeah, so that's also here. Yeah. And it's also a native pepper to the region. Except I put a lot in there.
Oh no.
And I call this culo en fuego.
Oh no.
I know some of those words. That's fire.
An ass.
An ass.
Yeah.
Ass fire?
Ass fire.
So I don't even. That might be too much.
Is that
just put your finger in it and then.
Just like pour like half of that into mine. Is that?
I'm kind of.
Okay, that's enough.
I kind of. That might be more than enough.
Oh God, Alice, why?
I know you're looking at me, but you're like you're probably the whitest one here, so I don't know if you can handle this, you northerner.
Oh God! Oh, it burns my nose.
I don't even know if that might be too much.
Have you had some of this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not did it stay down?
Yeah.
Did it come out okay?
No.
No.
Get some ice cream on the way home.
Like, is this literally too much? Uh-uh.
Nope. Nope. Spicy.
Did you put your finger in it?
Ooh, spicy. Yep.
Okay. Try a finger. Try
a finger.
Dip the finger.
Just a
finger.
Just a finger. Just one finger first.
Oh my God.
It's pretty much liquid bear mace.
It is.
Oh, it doesn't burn anymore. It only burned for a second.
Really?
Yeah.
My tongue is numb.
Your tongue still burns? Maybe?
I'm Pennsylvania Dutch. Pancakes are spicy.
And don't touch your face after you put your finger on that.
Now I want to drink
well,
it.
Well, now, yeah, because I remember the chicken wing at Christmas or whatever. Thanksgiving or whatever it was.
Experience in my entire life. No, my mouth already doesn't burn from it.
Okay.
But I don't want my butt to burn later. I live an hour from here. There's no stops. I'm gonna need a bucket.
Get the bucket. Get a diaper. Do an astronaut
first.
Style.
I want you first.
Scared. And I made it.
Oh, you're so scared. You've already done this.
I got it. Oh, my throat burns.
Yeah.
Agua? I have almond milk.
It's fine.
Okay.
Honestly, it's fine. I just because I shot it back and it shot the back of the throat. I mean, my mouth is spicy still.
Yeah, I overdid it on this one.
It's not just disgusting, though. Like, the thing with the hot wing, that was actually disgusting. Yeah. This is not disgusting. It's just spicy.
Yeah. It has a plant aftertaste, for
but
sure.
But I thank you for only giving me a very, very small amount.
Yeah.
I am going to wash my hands. I don't want to pet the dogs.
Now, one challenge I imagine
is the language barrier yes. when you're going down to Mexico, especially in a small community mm-hmm. where they might not speak English as much as let's yeah. say in Cancun.
Yeah.
Where they get a lot of Americans and tourists mm-hmm. coming down, so it's kind of like essential to learn our language. But you're learning Spanish.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I advise a lot of people to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It luckily when I was a kid I was always in bilingual classes yeah. growing up in San Diego, so I already knew all like the colors and numbers and
great.
And basic animals, and I took all through high school, tested out of it in college, and then I just haven't used it in a long time.
Yeah.
So it's kinda there.
I've been using my Duolingo, which I love.
Nice.
That little okay. app.
Duolingo. Great. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to try Babbel, but I didn't know how that stacked up.
I don't know. I just went with that one.
Like that one?
The problem that I'm having so far is that it's the area that we're in is not the textbook Spanish.
Right.
It's
and that is the biggest challenge, because yeah. I remember, like, in high school, yeah, we're learning how to speak Spanish, but that's more like Spain Spanish.
Yeah. Just
like when I was learning to speak, I took French because that made sense. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, you know, it was Paris French. Yeah. It wasn't Canada French.
Yeah.
You know, a Canadian would be like, I don't know what you are speaking, mm-hmm. miss. So.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of slang words. Mm-hmm. Words get cut off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can always kind of understand most of it, but I'm gonna have to. I think the immersion will help me.
Yeah, the immersion. I think that's the best way to learn it. I know I lived in Texas for 3 years, and my classmates had a nice pet name for me, Bendejo.
Ah.
Yeah, so I thought that meant nice one.
Yeah.
Is that what that means?
Yeah, I think it does.
I'm just kidding.
I have learned that, you know, that everything means penis.
Everything means penis.
Like,
which is great for you, because yes. you are a big fan of penises.
Yes.
But that's exactly like here. Everything means penis to you now. Yeah.
Also, I feel like, there are a lot of words for penis, but there's also a lot of words for butt.
Yeah.
I think we should try to name all the words for penis.
So
in English
and then Spanish and see who has more.
Like, is it because it's slang?
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
it's just a well-represented body part?
Yeah.
Guys just like to talk about their members. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is. That's why there's so many words. Because they're all from men just wanting to talk about the thing they're most proud of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or sometimes least proud of. Depending on how lucky you got.
A little bit curious.
Yeah, so, you know, I always thought that bird in Spanish was mm-hmm. pájaro. Apparently, that is also a penis. So you can't go be like,
but that's
estoy
like,
buscando pájaros. Like, I'm looking for birds. It means I'm looking for penis.
It's kind of also English, too, because you're like, oh, look at that pecker.
Yeah, oh.
And that's both.
I didn't think about
pecker
that.
Pecker the penis, pecker the woodpecker.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And hummer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not penis, but you know.
Yeah.
You know. You know, that means a couple different things. But yeah, that's interesting that bird and penis mm-hmm. would be a similarity there. Yeah. And here.
Yeah.
What is why? Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out why, like.
Why the penis birds?
I mean, I was thinking woodpecker, maybe because of like that.
Yeah.
Oh, because yeah, it's, yeah, like a jackhammer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fine. What do you think? Knox feels uncomfortable as the only male in the room.
Yes.
He feels singled out.
I feel like he's confident about his member.
He's also trying to drink the ass fire.
Don't worry.
Which, as a dog with food allergies, I can only imagine what ass fire would do to him.
I think it would do to him like any other dog without allergies. So we're learning some Spanish, and we're going to be merged in it, which
yes.
is going to help a lot.
Immersed.
Did I say merged?
Mm-hmm. Like we're gonna drown her in Spanish.
Drown me in
You're
Spanish.
You're gonna do that too. Yeah. Yeah. Drown you in Spanish words. Oh, look at me using the wrong language. I mean, not wrong words. I'm so good. This is why I'm not good with languages. I barely know English, and I'm constantly using the wrong English word. So for me to learn another language, it'd just be impossible. Mm-hmm. Have you had some major mistakes besides the bird penis?
Yes, I ordered piss tortillas.
Piss tortillas?
Yeah, so...
Is that what you ended up
getting?
Or did they just laugh at you?
No.
Because, I mean, I'm sure they could give you some piss tortillas.
She looked at me, and she didn't know if, like, she should laugh or not. But, so, Harina is flour, which you would order a flour tortilla. Mm-hmm. Orina is urine.
Oops.
So I ordered tortillas de orina instead of harina.
Maybe you should get rice tortillas from now on.
Yeah. Or get corn.
Did I say rice?
Yeah.
What is that? You don't get rice tortillas. That's not to say corn. Corn tortilla. Words are hard for me today.
It's because the bacanora.
Oh, yeah.
This is drunk history now.
Your tongue is now I'm drunk. Now I'm interviewing drunk history. I love that show. It's such a good show.
When I was in college in my Spanish class, we were doing like talking about something, and one of the things we needed to translate was like the woman is very warm, mm-hmm. and I remember this guy being like mujer, it's muy caliente, uh-huh. and our teacher just started laughing her ass off because apparently caliente, when referring to a human, means they're horny.
Oh,
it does not mean temperature hot. It uh-huh. means the spicy.
Yeah,
hot.
There's a couple other words for that too, like pelado.
I guess the app would not teach you that.
No. She just was laughing so hard. Because she was like a TA. You know, she's probably like 5-6 years older.
Yeah.
And we're like, why are you... And then she had to tell us.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like, awkward.
Huh, it means... And you know what? That was like 10 years ago, and I still fucking remember
yeah.
that. So it worked.
I had a friend who, you know, he learned Spanish, and he went down to Costa Rica and he taught English down there for uh-huh. a while, and when he came back to the States he became an English teacher. Yeah. and he had a lot of Spanish speakers in his classroom in high school. So he walks into the classroom, new teacher, looking like Bill Nye the Science Guy. Uh-huh. I mean, he's just typical nerdy white dude, right? And you know, he let his students talk shit about him in Spanish the first day. Second day he came in and started speaking Spanish. Uh-huh. And they're like, oh shit. But you know what? Like, he gained the respect of all those students.
Yeah.
He's like
yeah.
one of the best teachers ever. But yeah, it was that oh shit moment when you realize your nerdy white teacher is fluent in Spanish,
yeah.
including the naughty words.
Yeah.
There will be no naughty word usage at the demonstration site, though.
No.
Well, not on purpose, but it sounds like she makes lots of mistakes.
Yeah.
It sounds like their words are really easy to change up.
Are you guys also hoping to have people, like, from the United States come down and
yes.
learn as well?
Absolutely.
Because that would be awesome. Like, that's what I'm, like, you have this demonstration site down in Mexico, but...
Definitely want people coming down. Mm-hmm. One of the things... for this kind of regenerative economy that we're trying to help build is ecotourism. Mm-hmm. So being able to have people come down, we're going to build cabins on the demonstration site using natural building techniques. So we'll have workshops on building these cabins so people can come down and learn how to do earth eggs or rammed earth or trinchadas, which is the stacked rock walls.
It's like, explain all these things.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll have people coming
hopefully from
all
over
to take these classes and help fund the nonprofit.
I would think it's really important to also have an organization like this be in the heart of where you want
yes.
most of the growth and the conservation work
yeah.
to be.
So our site is about 35 miles, I believe, from where the reserve is, which is where the northernmost breeding population of jaguars is.
Wow.
Like kittens?
I think they're a little bit more elusive than...
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there could be kittens in the vicinity?
Yeah.
On the trail camera?
Yeah. right now, there's... Yeah, I mean, no one's can say that they're not there, so... but yeah, we're working to restore habitat and just make the environment better in that entire area where they're going to be traveling, because... You know, these animals don't stay on one spot. They're, you know, we need populations, we need that connectivity for genetics, we need the southern populations to be able to get up to the northern ones and beyond. And by creating a better habitat with these ranchers and farmers on their land and having it benefit them, then we can save the jaguar.
And save the world.
Save the world.
Great, well... Where should people go if they want to support La Tierra?
They can go to our website, La Tierra del Jaguar, or landofthejaguar.org. We have a fundraiser going on right now. But you guys might not
post this.
Will
it still be going on in 2 weeks? Because this will be up in 2 weeks.
Stupid podcast.
I'm not sure.
Delays.
But...
You can
go. Yes, you can go to our website.
They'll fundraise anytime.
Yes, so we are right now trying to fundraise to finish the classroom. Our biggest donors are myself and Randy.
Yes.
So,
and zookeeper.
And zookeeper. So Randy comes up here and does handyman work to and gets money. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we do have fundraisers, and we are very, very, very thankful for everyone that donates. Even $5, $10 helps.
Are you going to continue to come up and do more fundraising
absolutely.
As well?
Yeah.
Okay. And is it just, like, is money the most beneficial things?
Right
is there
now.
Some kind of wish list
Do you need poop bags down there?
buckets? Well, you know, eventually that bucket is going, you know, we've got the base for this very nice composting toilet set up to be set up. So
like
the bucket will be
someone
wants be gone
to donate
at some point.
A composting toilet.
Yeah,
we
don't
have
like
a warehouse or a
yeah.
donation drop off yet. So
yeah.
money is going to
money
be
is
on the
absolutely
website.
What we need right now. Because then we can purchase what we need down there, because
there's
also the issue of transporting
it
from here to there.
Yes, because it's across the border.
Yeah. So you can go to our website. Anything will help. We're very thankful to anyone that donates.
And you guys also have social media, right?
Yes, Facebook and Instagram. Just look up La Tierra del Jaguar, Land of the Jaguar.
And we'll tag you guys for our very small following.
Yes.
But we will tag you guys. Hopefully some new people will be informed about you that hadn't heard about you before.
Our five listeners.
We have more than five Instagram followers.
Ooh. Yes, we do.
And they're not all people we know. So hopefully some of them will be interested in what you guys are doing. Want to learn more.
Yeah.
Or at least want to know more about your bacanora.
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 Yeah.
Like
come
it.
Down, have some bacanora, check out the composting toilet. Take a shower with bucket. Yeah. At least the culo and fuego. Like, you might not make it to the toilet.
I did not have any.
Wasn't just washing my hands.
Hey, that's my toilet.
I was washing my hands. I think you would have.
No,
this door was open.
The dollhouse is very small, so if you want to take a shit in here, everyone's going to know. Turtlenose.
Yeah.
She's taking a shit in here and stung up the place. But thank you so much for stopping
thank
by
you for having
and
me.
Telling us all about your adventures. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.